The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Hi, this is Sue Lee from Face Off Season 2. You're listening to It Came From the Radio on WGBB.
The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, It Came From the Radio.
Welcome once again to It Came From the Radio. This is your host.
Wow!
That's behind the scenes for you guys, folks.
Unless we're watching on the video, well, what the heck was going on? Like a tornado thing.
Yes,
flying around.
We actually see
headphones through the air. Hassan, you should see this, man. It was like
a circus. Yeah. Don't rub it in.
Together.
That was Brian the Engineer. We have Charles Saladino, senior correspondent
doing?
Charles Saladino in the studio. And we also have Hassan Godwin. What are you doing this week, Hassan?
I'm the traveling correspondent. I'm on assignment. I'm in another world. I'm on another planet right now.
You're on Pluto. You're on Pluto. That's now a planet again, right?
I'll be on Goofy
or Pennsylvania.
Next week.
Yeah. One or the other.
So if anybody's having any trouble listening to us on the air,
tough,
you can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com. Listen to us on the live audio streaming.
Or dead audio streaming, whichever one is more convenient for you,
yes.
I think.
Or if you also have the computer on a high-definition webcam, you can see us on the GBB website right now, live, provided that you're watching us. Listening to us on iHeartRadio, that's some other time, some other place, so you can't see us in the web camera at that time.
Exactly.
Normally,
well said, Mark.
Normally we would take it away with the news first, but we have some announcements. So
our own
senior correspondent, Charlie Saladino,
that would be me,
was at the New York Horror Con yesterday.
And that's the reception I got. We recorded it. So
I know we're going to have our big...
Did you sign some cars, Charlie?
Did I do some what?
Did you sign cars?
Yes, I did.
Did
I had a book signing there.
Signing?
Yeah.
So we're going to have our big New York Horror Con show with all the interviews that you did on the 8th. February 8th show.
Right.
But you want to do a quick mention about a couple of things you have in front of us quickly?
Quick things. It was one of the greatest shows I've visited. We have a lot of people. We have an amazing book by Jim Dwyer. We will explain all about that on our show. We have the lovely Elizabeth Shepherd, who is an actress in my day, and she was wonderful, and it was an honor to interview her. We have Ashley Massaro, who is the WWE
Diva.
We have... Eileen, I'll be all right. Dietz from The Exorcist, who I had the pleasure to talk to a little bit. And these ladies over here with this calendar, this is a marvelous new thing that I came upon by Michael Zinn and his lovely models. It's called Woman of Armageddon. And the way he describes it, it's like Road Warrior meets Victoria's Secrets. So it's fun. The models were great. Everybody was great at that table. We have a lot of other stuff that I'm not even mentioning now, but we'll leave that all for the 8th. Just want to thank, big thank you to, I'll tell you in a minute. Now, big thank you to Elsie, is it Green Ginsburg? Is that
Elise?
Yes. Elise, I'm sorry, Elise. And Frank?
No, it was Elsie.
Yeah.
Ginsburg, yeah. And Frank Patch from
Frank, who
New York
I met
Con,
and
yeah.
thanked them both for the you know, the wonderful hospitality that they extended to me. Yeah, and yeah, that's and guess who was there? Our friend Chucky Morrow from
Royal Collectibles.
Royal Collectibles, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was a good show, and I can't wait to talk about this on the 8th because it was fabulous.
Yep, and also as another announcement, today we have our guest Amber Benson back, which is, for us, will be very, well, for me, it'd be very weird because this is the first time I've had a celebrity twice.
Thank you to our studio audience here.
On a show, so interviewing somebody who I've already interviewed, who's like, you know, a big-time celebrity, it's going to be weird for me. Yeah. So I actually had to do some research. I had to listen to the previous interview to make sure I don't ask the same questions because, you know, that's a waste of time.
See,
I
would have never, ever said that. I would have never admitted that.
No, because
I would have kept that to myself.
No, I like sharing.
I know. We're just kidding.
So now we're going to take away with the news.
Are we going to take it away with the news?
Yes. The news
I think you should take it away with the news, Mark.
That's a great idea.
Go ahead. What are you waiting
the
for?
The news is brought to you in part by the New York Comic Con, which we are the official Big Apple Con. Jeez, I keep on messing that up.
Yeah, we're not anything official at the
Comic-Con. Yeah, New York Comic-Con. It's a Big Apple Con.
That applause was for you messing that up.
Yes. Celebrating the 20th anniversary, they're going to have a show on March 7th, which we will be there. We'll have a table. And the headliner is Jason Day or Frank, Green Power Ranger. And they added new people on there, so I know Rowdy Piper is also going to be on there.
And a couple
of guys from The Walking Dead. Tickets are on sale now. And if I'm not mistaken, we're gonna be on the website too. We are gonna be on the website.
We are going to be on the website.
So in a couple of days, you should see us on the website. So it will be www.nycbm.com, New York Comic Book Marketplace, for more information. I believe it's $20 a ticket, and they're on sale now. And if you don't want to use your credit card or anything, you send them a money order. It's only $15. So right there, you get a deal. You get a deal for that. So let's see what we got for the news. As always, we start with the sad news.
Is somebody using a buzzsaw that we don't know about or a dog crying?
I think there's a dog somewhere nearby.
Oh, wow. My God. You can hear that?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, we can hear that.
Obviously, we just found out where the problem is. It sounded like either a bad rock singer, a buzzsaw, or a dog that's in pain.
It's pretty much all of those things, unfortunately. I am in the land of the werewolves, and we are inside. We're in a bunker right now because the sun is about to go down. And so this is what usually happens. This is what I do for the radio show. I'm the traveling correspondent, and they send me to these really bad danger zones. And I very much apologize for it.
This was like whoever smelted Delta. So it was all saying that. You heard it? Oh, now we know.
Yeah, I'm looking, and I'm the one that's hard of hearing, and I'm looking. I'm saying, is that me? Should I go to the doctor now?
I just didn't think anyone could hear. I didn't think people could hear it that well through my headset here. But
it was like I was waiting for Basil Rathbone. For the Hounds of the Baskervilles to come in.
That's going to be bad. Well, now you see the danger sign there.
Yeah. There you go.
All right, so,
studio audience, calm down. We found out what it was.
Sad news.
Said anything.
Sad news.
Back to the news.
From the desk of Charlie Saladino. Last week you mentioned this, but I have the official copy this time. Actor Rod Taylor, who starred in Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, has died this month at his home in Los Angeles after a dinner party. No cause of death has been reported. Of note, his first leading role was in the original The Time Machine in 1960, and in 2009, he made a cameo as a prime minister in Winston Churchill in Inglourious Basterds. He was due to turn 85 last week, Sunday. So,
I liked him, as I mentioned last week. I enjoyed his acting.
More sad news. Actress Donna Douglas, best known for playing Ellie Mae Clampett in a 1960s sitcom, The Beverly Hillbillies, has also died this month from pancreatic cancer. Of note, Donna appeared in more than 270 episodes of the series and also starred in a famous Twilight Zone episode, The Eye of the Beholder. That's the one where she was under the wrap,
she was
right?
In the coma.
She was beautiful. And
and she was going under some plastic surgery, and they were trying to make her to be like everybody else, but everybody else was all disfigured and she wasn't. So that was it was a very groundbreaking episode, but she was in that too. And I didn't know that was the same girl until I got the news. Mm-hmm. And she was 82.
not really old at all, actually.
No, not really. No.
But I got to tell you something about her. Everywhere she went, she had the pigtails.
Did she really?
That was her thing? That was her thing. She never, that same hairdo on the Beverly Hillbillies, wherever she went, she wore that. Because, as she said, she enjoyed being Ellie Mae, and she enjoyed the role, and God bless her if she did.
Yeah.
So, moving on to happier news.
Bad news.
Moving on to happier news.
Happy news.
Sylvester Stallone?
Isn't that a character in Looney Tunes?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sylvester Stallone has announced that
he
is going to make a fifth and seemingly final Rambo movie titled Rambo Last Blood.
Last Blood?
Last Blood.
Wow. It should
be called Rambo Geriatric Ward.
Yeah, because there's so many questions left unanswered.
For those of you paying attention, it has been 7 years since Stallone last reprised the role in the movie simply titled Rambo. And if that isn't enough Sylvester Stallone for you, he will be returning to his other most famous role of Rocky Balboa for the 7th time in the movie Creed, where he'll play the trainer of Apollo Creed's grandson, portrayed by Michael B. Jordan. So the
grandson.
Yeah.
Why? What about his children? Doesn't he have kids of his own that want to be fighters?
They already took care of that. He's got to start leeching
the neighbor's kids.
They took care of that
to get another movie out of it.
They took care of that in Rocky V and Rocky VI. They took care of the son.
Yeah, I don't know.
He didn't want to be a fighter anymore. He did go for it. He beat up the other kid in the schoolyard in Part 5. Everybody was happy. And then he grew up.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So now things are getting so bad that in order to stretch the plot, they actually have to start leeching the neighbor's kid. Come on, you want to be a fighter? Come on, you know you want to be a fighter.
Drago killed him, right? Yeah, Drago killed him.
Yeah, Apollo Creed is dead. He's been dead since Rocky IV.
Dolph killed him and he became an expendable.
Yes.
He didn't even become an expendable. Oh, well, Apollo didn't.
Right.
Drago did.
Yes.
Drago became an expendable.
Yeah, so, you know, it's one of those things. That,
yeah.
Which leads me to why didn't Mr. T become an expendable?
Huh, that would be cool.
I don't know.
Well, we'll see in part.
He was too busy chopping down his neighbor's trees.
A pity to fool to make
relatively
suspendable.
Relatively crazy.
So speaking,
and boycotting the A-Team because it was too violent.
Yes, it was too violent. That's why he wasn't in the A-Team movie, which was kind of sad. I would have appreciated him being in there.
It was kind of crazy because considering he made his money off of Rocky and the original A-Team and basically being the big, burly, silent guy in Hollywood.
Right. But he was for kids. He has on cartoon show with Mr. T cereal.
Okay. I guess that makes up for everything.
Yes, it does.
Right.
Moving along. It's 2015, and for those of you not paying attention,
Surprise. We
are now in the year that Marty McFly went to in Back to the Future Part 2.
Those of you not paying attention. Who's not paying attention to that?
Some people aren't paying attention.
No,
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
thanks to Nike, the self-lacing high tops shown in the movie are going to become a reality.
Wait, you said self-lacing?
Yes, if you remember in Back to the Future 2, when you put the sneakers on, they
had power laces.
Yeah. So they're going to become a reality. A Nike... innovative chief tinkerer, Tinker Hatfield, that's his name, Tinker Hatfield, confirmed the news this week at a trade show last Tuesday in Long Beach, California. No release date nor price points are available for the sneaker as of yet. However, Nike already had auctioned off 1,500 pairs of a limited edition shoe of the same type back in 2011. The proceeds went to the Michael J. Foundation, and the shoes were running a price tag of $5,000.
Right. In other words, not for the average citizen to be able to wear and to enjoy. they probably would electrocute you if you went out in the rain. I do not believe that they have mastered the waterproof electronics just yet.
Don't.
And the last place you want to be electrocuted is in your feet.
Yeah.
But they're rubber, so they're insulated.
So let me ask you something. If you want to take off your shoe and something short circuits, do you have to walk around with your shoes like for life?
You have to cut them off. You probably have to cut them off. Along with the fact that I'm not going to be impressed until they do the flying car. That's what we were promised. We were promised the flying car. We're not getting the car, flying car, but we're getting the crappy power laces. What about the self-drying jacket?
I
want the self-drying jacket.
I've said this many times. People can't drive safely on the road on the ground. We can't possibly have fly. There'll be pieces of car just falling down, raining.
Here's the thing.
You could die with a fender bender if you flew. You have flying cars.
Here's the thing. Nothing in either Blade Runner nor Back to the Future ever promised that it was safe. They just promised that the cars could fly. That's all they were interested in portraying for you. So no one said it was safe.
That's very true. However, technology has come to play. There is, if you go online, there is an actual flying car. Now, it's a car that transforms into a plane. It's a concept car.
Oh, my
car.
God.
The wings fold up, and it's a street-legal car. The insurance is crazy because, you know, if it gets a dent, you can't fly it anymore. But it actually exists. You can go look on it online. It's shown
Mark.
The guy. They put the wheel on the steering wheel, change it, and it flies. They've shown it. So we have flying
Mark.
Cars.
Here's the thing. You got to answer for everything, right?
No.
Where's Mr. Fusion? Tell me where Mr. Fusion is, and I'll stop this crusade of mine.
Mr. Fusion, they just.
Is that like Mr. Coffee?
No. Yes, that was that's exactly, yeah.
That's how they powered the DeLorean.
DeLorean, yeah.
Mr. Fusion.
Well, they call those things garbage disposals. But so yes, so we're in a future.
It looked like a coffee. It looked like an instant coffee maker. You could drop banana peels and aluminum cans in it and it would power your vehicle.
Yes. So so that's all we're waiting on now is Mr. Fusion. But, so, you know, we have the sneakers, we got the car.
No.
So, and we got the stuff that they had in the Jetsons with the FaceTime and all that stuff, right? Where he was, all they need is the fake faces. Do you remember the Jetsons when she sneezed and her face came off when they were talking to the friend?
Like, I did that in the car. I did that in the car coming here. I have bad allergies. I'm sorry.
So yeah.
Well, basically, the future just kind of sucks. And that's basically because of all the stuff that we were promised in the 80s and the 90s. And none of that has come to pass because none of it's practical and none of it, you know, none of it makes any safety kind of sense for the average citizen who, as Mark so eloquently put it, can't really even master the road-bound cars, the ground-bound vehicles, rolling vehicles on rubber tires. We still haven't been able to master transportation with that. So, yeah, we're not going to get any of that other stuff. We also have no moon base. We have no Mars base. We have nothing.
Well,
the future is not what they said it was.
We have a Mars base. We just don't know about it.
We do not.
It's
secret
Mars base.
Maybe we do have a Mars base. I'll give you that.
Didn't you see,
we might have a Mars base.
Didn't you see the commercial where Buzz Aldrin was punching the aliens on the moon?
No, I did not see that.
It was like,
that just sounds hysterical. I wish I did see it.
It is. I think it's a sneaker commercial where this is what if he had worn a sneaker and he went to all different places and he was punching aliens in the moon because he wore the sneakers.
Okay.
It's funny. It really was.
I saw a movie one time when I was a chitlin.
Only one?
Just one time because I don't like movies. No, when I was a child, and it was, I think it was from one of the, like the old-time serials, like it was from the 30s when you went to the movies or something and you saw everything
right.
And its mother.
Yeah.
And it was a space movie. They had a rocket ship, and it took place in 1979. And I wish I can remember the movie because the things they had.
Was it The Three Stooges Go to Mars?
No.
Oh, 'cause
I would have remembered that. You know, but the things they depicted as what they should have in 19,
right?
You know, and I think I don't. It's just funny.
It reminds me. There was a discussion a couple of years ago. A long time ago. It was an Icon. Many years ago, they were talking about how technology, that the science fiction writers, got everything right except for the size of computers. You know, back then everything was like, oh, we're going to have communication on the phone, you know, with the communicators and all that stuff. But the computers got bigger and bigger and bigger as opposed to what actually happened, which got smaller and smaller and smaller. Oh. So that was the one thing that they got wrong. So we're ready for...
Yeah, as opposed to modern science predictions, such as Back to the Future, where they pretty much got everything wrong about what the future was going to be like.
Sort of. They had the TV with all the different screens on it. Yeah, I remember a couple of things. They had the hoverboard. It actually exists. There's a hoverboard now.
Well, the hoverboard isn't really the kid's toy. We don't hydrate our food. We don't have flying cars. We don't have power laces that are generalized.
We're getting there.
We don't have self-drying clothes. It's getting there. Okay. That's fair.
I actually do have power laces. I just keep my shoes tied and slip my feet into them.
See, there you go.
Yeah, it works for me.
So
I'm done. I tried.
We are ready for
I contributed.
We're ready for our break. We'll be back with the Came From the Radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music. Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mara Torres, speaking, along with our senior correspondent, Charlie Saladino. With me in the studio, engineer Brian Graves. Is it Brian Graves? Yeah, Brian Graves. And we have Hassan Godwin on the phone. This week, we're going to have a special guest on the phone, which she's on the phone right now. She's waiting for us to introduce us, like she's waiting in the wings. It's super cool, actress, writer, and director. I met her at the New York Comic Con. We had an interview with her. And super awesome girl, Amber Benson. Say hi, Amber.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Amber, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Little slice of heaven.
It's monsoon season over here in New York, so it was great getting down here.
Are you guys freezing? I don't want to tell you how hot it is in Los Angeles.
Well, today was in the 40s, but this morning was bad, and the rain kind of froze, so it took half a day to thaw, so we were all surfing up here, but not the way you guys usually do.
it's 75 degrees.
Oh, God bless you, Amber. Thanks for sharing.
That's why you're so happy.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, she sounds sunshiny happy, doesn't she?
Yes.
She sounds like she's glowing.
That's all right.
I sound like I'm wearing a tank top, which I am.
So, Amber, you we talked at the New York Comic Con, and you have the book that you were promoting at then came out.
Yes.
So it is The Witches of Echo Park. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the book that's out now?
Well, it's my first solo adult novel. My last series, the Calliope Reaper Jones books, were they were geared a little younger. These are definitely adult. There's some naughty bits in them. And it's basically a mash note to my hood in Los Angeles, Echo Park, which is one of the most magical places in Southern California. You walk around, and sandwiched in between hipster coffee shops are these amazing little botanicas where you can go in and buy spells and saints' candles and Aquanet hairspray, because, you know, when you're lighting saints' candles, you need some hairspray. And then, you know, there are these hill houses that are, you know, off of these stair streets. You can only reach them by going up these crazy sort of winding stairs, and they're very beautiful little bungalows with, like, magic fairy lights. And I don't know. It's just a super cool neighborhood. And then I also wanted to write about my lady friends. So it's sort of like, what better way to sort of deal with genre and women? Put them in a coven. Make them deal with each other within the confines of a witch's coven. So it's witches in my magic hood of Echo Park.
So women witches, that's not something that's uncommon. But
no.
When I read the excerpt a few months ago, it had a lot of character development. Was that an important part to incorporate into the book, which is having women, real women in books, as opposed to just the quote-unquote witches that they have out there?
Yeah, for me, it was about, I wanted to talk about the relationships I have with my lady friends. Because growing up, I was a super-duper tomboy. I had tons of dude friends. I was always muddy. I was always out in the backyard collecting bugs and being kind of obnoxious and jumping off the top of the house and just being as rambunctious as humanly possible. But I craved having, like, a babysitter's club book, like, group of late friends. And I didn't have that. I had, like, solo girlfriends, but I didn't have, like, a crew. It was only in my 30s that I kind of acquired these groups of ladies. And so I wanted to talk about those relationships, how important they are to me. These women are, like, my rocks. You know, when stuff is not going well, we all sit down with a bottle of wine and just talk for hours and hours and hours, and it keeps me going. It saves me because, you know, relationships come and go, but your lady friends will always stick by your side. So I wanted to write about that. That was super important for me, and these are real women in my life, so I wanted to make them three-dimensional. I wanted you to identify with them and feel for them and go on this journey with them. I didn't want this to be like an aspirational book. I feel like a lot of urban fantasy is you have this main character and she sort of could be anybody. And I wanted these women to be very specific. So there's pieces of my lady friends sort of peppered throughout each of the characters.
So when you were developing the story, did you have a specific character? Like, each one of your friends, like, okay, this is going to be the grandmother. This is going to be the one learner. Did you have that in mind when you started?
You know, I didn't want anyone to be identified solely with one character, so I stole pieces of them and put them into different, you know, characters. So maybe one of them, like, looks like one of my friends, but behaves like a totally different friend, you know, and her relationship is with somebody who's, like, totally different than the person she's actually in real life in a relationship with. And so there's just, it's sort of like an amalgam. I just took, you know, an arm from this person and a head from this. It was like Frankenstein. Felt like Dr. Frankenstein, guys. I was sitting there piecing together these women based on all the parts of my lady friends. I didn't want anyone to get mad at me, so I couldn't, like, take anybody wholly, you know?
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. When any of your lady friends read that, did they say, hey, wait a minute?
You know, I don't know. They've all been really supportive and wonderful about it. And I don't know if anybody thinks that anybody is wholly them. I pray not.
Okay.
I pray that they just enjoy the book, enjoy, you know, seeing pieces of themselves.
So you've written, you've acted, you've directed. You did say last time that you preferred being the director because you're in control of everything and it's a group effort. When you're writing something, do you have in mind that maybe kind of sort of this might become a project that you can direct at a point in time in the future?
I definitely felt that way about the first series of books I did, the Calliope Reaper Jones books. They were very much sort of, oh, I could do something with this. I could take these and we could do like a TV show or we could do, and we actually went around pitching them and, everybody just wanted to option them, and they didn't want me involved. And I was like, wait a minute, this is my baby. I'm not going to just give you this for $2 and let you sit on it for 3 years or change it wholly so that I don't know what it is anymore. So I ended up, like, holding back and saying, you know what, until someone is willing to let me be a part of it and help to shape how it turns out, it's not worth it to me. You know, $2 is not enough. Like, if someone was like, here's $1 million, sure, but... You know, a little bit of money is not enough.
So everybody's listening out. Yeah, selling out, that's your price. $1 million is the sellout price.
It's probably a lot less than that, you guys. But it was more than what I was being offered as far as, like, not being able to be a part of it, you know, to have some say in it. It's important to me. I don't want things to be ruined or changed so completely that it doesn't make sense anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, we've seen that many times when people say, oh, you know, we've read the book and then they option it for a movie and then it has nothing to do with the book at all except the title. And they're like, well, what was
exactly.
the point? What was the point?
I've been rewatching. This is going to turn me into such a, like, granny. I've been rewatching all the Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah.
I love them so much.
Yeah.
And, like, there's actually an episode where Angela Lansbury's book is turned into, like, a, you know, it's like a real deal mystery, and it's been turned into, like, this teeny bop breakdancing musical in a graveyard. And they're like, we just want the title. And I was like, that's my life. I just want my title.
So you're the modern day Angela Lansbury. Is that what you're saying?
No, I wish. I wish I was a modern. She's amazing. I just saw her. She's in L.A. The Amundsen doing Blythe Spirit. And this woman is, I think, 89 years old, and she's up there dancing a jig and doing all this stuff on stage. And I was like, if I could be like her when I am 89, then I am doing just fine. She's amazing.
So, Hassan, do you have any questions for Amber?
Absolutely. And actually, about Angela Lansbury, if I could be like her now, I would be doing just fine. But we're going to stay off that. This question has probably been asked, but I really find myself wanting to know the answer while we're having this conversation. So most of us know you from your acting, from
various
movies that you've made, and your television appearances. But what made you get into, like, actual novel writing and, you know, like, doing that hardcore like you've been doing?
It's hardcore. You're totally right. It's like the marathon of writing. It's not like a screenplay. You know, it's like, oh, here's 100,000 words to go write. Have fun, people.
Right.
You know, it's funny. I always wrote. Growing up, I wrote a lot of really, this is like my stock answer, but it's just the truth. I wrote a lot of really bad poetry and, like, ridiculous little short stories and plays. So I always wrote stuff, but it wasn't until I started acting professionally when I was like 14, 15, you have all this downtime on set as an actor. You spend more time sitting in your trailer or in the honey wagon or wherever they put you, some dressing room somewhere far away from set, than you actually do doing the acting. You know, I think Laurence Olivier said that, you know, they pay me for the waiting, the acting I do for free, and it's true. You sit around a lot. So I'm a big reader, so I would read. But then I was like, okay, I can't just sit here and read all day. As much as this is awesome and I'm enjoying this, I need to be productive. I need to be doing stuff. So I started writing screenplays, and I started working on little more short stories and stuff. And then when Buffy happened, Christopher Golden, who is a writer and a comic book writer, or novelist and comic book writer, he approached me about writing some Buffy comics together because he had done some with James Marsters, and they'd done very well, and he wanted to try it again.
Awesome.
Yeah, and so Chris and I ended up doing a couple of Buffy comics, you know, Willow and Tara comics for Dark Horse. And then we got asked by the BBC to do an animated show for them. So we wrote this thing called The Ghost of Albion, which was really fun. And I got to direct the first one, and that was super cool. We had, like, Anthony Daniels in it and Emma Sams. And, yeah, it just was so much fun. And then Random House asked us to novelize it. And so we ended up doing two books in that universe for Random House, for Del Rey. And that is sort of how I got into the writing of the books. It was because of Chris Golden. I went to Chris Golden University and learned how to write real deal prose.
And then you got the bug. And now
I got the bug.
And now you can't stop.
Now I can't stop. Yeah. Well, you know, as an actor, you are at the mercy of other people. You're constantly waiting for somebody else to give you a job. When you're a writer, you can write anytime, anywhere, in your PJs, in your house, outside, on the fire escape, wherever you want, and no one can tell you no. And that's really, like, freeing, you know, as an artist. You get to just do it the way you want rather than waiting for somebody else to tell you you can.
So, speaking of Buffy, I have to ask, when they approached you to have your character die, How did that happen? How did you feel about, like, you're like, oh, I still want to work. I want to be in this. This is a great thing. Like, how did that happen?
Well, we were shooting the finale of season 5, and it was when, I'm trying to remember where we were, downtown, I think. And it was when Michelle Trachtenberg was, like, Dawn was, like, up on the giant fire, whatever, you know, like in the tall, fiery, looking thing or whatever. Anyway, so they had this, like, fake doll of Michelle up way high on this thing. And so we were, you know, it was a whole night of, like, dealing with this fake doll up on the thing. And Joss and his assistant at the time took me aside, and they're like, hey, can we chat for a little bit? And I was like, all right, because they were doing all the setups and stuff. And so we went back to the where the trailers were, and Joss was like, so I have something really exciting to tell you. And I was like, okay, what do you have to tell me? What exciting thing? He's like, we're going to kill your character. And he was so excited. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's really exciting. Yay. And inside I was like, oh, no, I don't want to leave the show. But I understood. He explained. He's like, look, it's really about this addiction storyline. Willow is going through this sort of... she's falling apart, basically. She's just getting more and more out of control with her addiction to magic. And the only way she's going to hit bottom is to lose the thing that's most important to her, which is Tara. And I totally understood from the story point of view, you know, what he was trying to do. And I felt like it made sense. As much as I wanted to stick around, I understood. I was like, come on, can't she just lose an arm? She has to die. Can't we just have, like, one-armed Tara fooling around set? But I understood from the story point of view, and I don't think had Joss realized how insane it was going to be after her death, I don't think he would have done it the way he did it. I think he would have found a different way, because the outcry was just so insane. People just really, it was very painful and heart-wrenching for people, and I think a lot of people were turned off because of it. You know, they weren't looking at it from a story point of view. They were looking at it, hey, you have two women who are role models to the LGBTQ community, and you've killed one of them, and we want her back, and it's not fair. So, you know, I don't think he would have done it the same way had he had 20/20, you know, vision.
You got the superpower of hindsight, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's a bummer, you know, but it was a wonderful experience, and Buffy has allowed me, it's like a springboard, it's allowed me to go do all this other stuff. Without it, I don't think I would have ever written comics, and I maybe never would have written a book, you know?
You mentioned something about how it's for the story. As a writer now, do you find that you make certain sacrifices for the sake of the story? Because a lot of times you see the mainstream media, as we mentioned before, how they kind of try to placate the audience and try to whitewash everything and try to make everybody happy. As a writer, do you find that sometimes that you have to make the hard choices to make the decisions for the sake of the story?
Yes, all the time. You make choices that you know the audience is going to hate you for. but you feel like it's necessary for the story. And that's why I understood where Joss was coming from. You know, granted, when you're doing something with such a high-profile, you know, group of characters, like Buffy was just so instrumental in sort of opening the door for LGBTQ characters being treated like human beings and not just, you know, two girls kissing, oh, gratuitous fun. You know, this was about two people who just happened to be women who fell in love, and it was portraying them as real people, and I think it really was important to a lot of people. And so I think, you know, when you run into those situations, sometimes, you know, the sacrifices you make for the greater good transcend what you're doing for the story. But like I said, hindsight is 20/20, and I think had he known that, he probably would have made a different choice. But I feel for him because I make those choices every day when I'm writing. When I kill off a character, people hate me. I get nasty letters.
Well, I wanted to ask you a very important question to me. When you're writing and you get to that last paragraph and you put it down on paper and you sit back and you say, yeah, I'm happy. This is, what's the feeling? What's the feeling that's going through you at that point? That you finished a novel, which is an accomplishment. And there it is. You put the last paragraph down and you say, I'm done. Are you sad because there's no more work? Are you happy that it's done? What's going through your mind?
I'm never satisfied. I'm never 100% happy. When you finish like the first draft and you're done, there's like this feeling of relief because you've sort of like gotten it out of your head. But then you know you're going back in for a second draft and possibly a third and fourth draft. When I'm done with that final like fourth draft and the editor's happy and things are sort of at a place where we cannot continue to change stuff, I think it's a feeling of exhaustion and a feeling of you're proud because you've done this thing. It's like climbing a mountain, but it's sad because it's over, and it's and I'm still thinking while all this is happening, some part of my brain is going, that could be better. I could change that line. It could be better. I should redo that character, you know, piece in chapter 15. I feel like that could be, you know, I'm always like rewriting it in my head, even when I'm done. I'm never satisfied. And I think that's the beauty of being an artist. It's the thing that drives you, that need to like constantly better what you're doing and find new ways of telling stories.
Yeah, exactly. It drives you for the next book. It drives you constantly. Yes. How you had a book signing in our city.
And Midtown Comics.
I did.
And how did that go?
It was amazing. I felt really bad. People had to wait outside. Like, the line filled up inside, and they made people wait outside, and it was so cold. I felt so bad. These poor kids sitting up there freezing. They come in, and they're, like, shaking from standing in the cold. It was wonderful, though. I've had a wonderful partnership with Midtown Comics for the last, last 6 books that I've done. They have been super supportive of my work. I have signed there for pretty much every book I've done from the Calliope Reaper Jones series and now from The Witches. Those guys are great. And it's really funny because, you know, I wanted to do a signing in Manhattan and the publisher was having trouble finding a place. And so I just like walked into Midtown Comics one day and I said, hi, my name is Amber Benson. You might know me from that TV show, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I have this book coming out. Would you guys be down to host the signing? And they looked at me like I was insane. And then they're like, you should talk to da-da-da-da. And that's how it started. I'm ballsy sometimes, guys. Sometimes the balls just, you know, they get you in there and you just gotta make an ass out of yourself and see what happens. All someone can say is no, right?
Speaking of balls.
No. All right, wait, I need to hear how this segue is gonna go.
You were at at the New York Comic Con, you were at a panel about talking about developing characters for women. And you mentioned how important it is, even today, how important it is for the women community to be represented correctly. Do you find it that there's more pressure on you to do that because you're a woman?
You know, I feel like there's pressure in general to create good characters, male or female or transgendered or animal or whatever you're writing about. Like, you need to make them real and three-dimensional. I think that is sort of what that's the onus on the artist, is to create real characters that we can identify with. But as a woman, my thing, the thing that I hold on to, and I feel like there's a lot of pushback on, is that I think women are fallible, and they make mistakes, and they are not perfect. And they can be anti-heroes, and they can be bad guys, and they can do awful things and be redeemed or not redeemed. I think that, you know, there's got to be a place where women can be treated the same way as female characters can be treated the same way as male characters, where they can go through those sort of anti-hero arcs or those evil arcs and be real people while all that's happening. You know, that's really important to me. I want to create real characters who are imperfect, who make mistakes, because that's being human.
So is that a motivation when you see things out there that are like, oh, I can't believe that they had a sketch that was the generic female character in a romantic comedy. It was on Saturday Night Live. And when you see that, are you like, oh, my God, that's so I'm motivated to make sure that this is right for my audience?
Yeah. I mean, the problem is that a lot of women's stuff is directed toward women is about fantasy. It's about creating this fantasy world that you can, as a reader, can step in to and sort of put yourself on or imprint onto the main character. And so you don't want a character that is an asshole. I mean, sorry. You don't want a jerk character. I don't know if you can curse or not. I apologize.
No, we're live on a radio and not allowed to curse.
Don't worry about it. It's New York.
You don't want a jerk. You know what I mean? You don't want a schmucky character to imprint on. You want a character that maybe is struggling a little bit, but eventually becomes perfect and does these great things, and you know, because you want to go on that journey. It's like a ride that you're part of. So a lot of times people don't want to read about characters that are sort of human and fallible and make really awful mistakes, you know, because you just want to be in a fantasy world. But I think there has to be both. You have to have those aspirational characters, and you have to have the ones that are real people that do make mistakes and do dumb, you know, do, I keep saying doo-doo. Doo-doo.
Doo-doo is okay.
that do make dumb mistakes and do awful things, because that is real. You need both. You need both representative, you know, represented, can't talk. I threw myself by cursing. I'm so sorry, you guys.
Don't worry. If we get fined, I'll send you the bill.
Okay. Oh gosh! There goes all the money from Wichita Park. All $2. Darn it!
So, what is in the future? What's next for Amber Benson? What are you gonna be doing next? What can we be looking for after we read this 5-6 times, buying multiple copies? What do we do next?
Well, I'm working on book 2 right now, so that will be coming to the world in probably January, February of next year, 2016. And then I have a short that I directed called Chivenge that is a tongue-in-cheek sort of girl power action horror comedy that was really, really fun to make. It was the first time I've shot an action sequence, so that was really fun. I was like, I want to make action movies now. This is the best. It's like ballet or something. It's all choreographed and pretty, and I really enjoyed it.
When can we see that? Where can we see it?
Well, we just are about to finish our Indiegogo campaign for Post and to finish the film and stuff. So we're hoping we'll premiere at some festivals in 2015. I'd like to go to Fantastic Fest. That's one of my all-time favorite film festivals, and I feel like it's definitely a genre. You know, the thing we're working on, Chivenge, is definitely in that genre world. So Fantastic Fest would be an awesome place for us to go.
So as a follow-up to Charlie, where's the Indiegogo? What's the website? We need to know.
Oh, it's on it's Indiegogo Chivenge. I think it's Indiegogo.com/ Chivenge. She and B-E-N-G-E. She or Chivenge. Chivenge. A friend was like, "This movie Chivenge you're working on." I'm like, Chivenge, not Chivenge.
And where else can we find your stuff? Can we go online? Do you have a website? Do you have where can we pick up the book? We need to know all this stuff right now.
Okay, so you can go into your local bookstore and find a copy of the book. You can also go online. I know that IndieBound will connect you to a bookstore near you that will have the book, or they can ship it to you. You know, Amazon is another outlet. there are a lot of places that that you can get the book online, and I know there are e-books and all kinds of stuff. But like I said, your local bookstore is probably the best place to go in and just ask for The Witches of Echo Park. And then you can go to my Tumblr. It's amberbensonwrotethis.tumblr.com. And that's sort of my little world. And then I'm very active on the Facebook and the Twitter. And so that's @Amber_Benson. Do not go to @AmberBenson. She is not me. She's very sweet. She gets harassed by my fans a lot. So I think on her thing, it actually says, I'm not the girl from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. and then Amber Benson Wrote This at Facebook. That's my page.
So with a famous name, does that happen to you a lot that other people with your name they think that they're you?
This is the first time I've really run into that full scale, because she beat me to Twitter. She had the actual @AmberBenson first. So I think she gets kind of bogged down in tweets. She actually, when all the witches stuff started, because I started doing all the press for it and really pushing it on Twitter and Facebook, she actually tweeted to all, you know, hey, all of you fans of @_AmberBenson, I am not the lesbian vampire erotica writing book person. I was like, okay, that's me. I'm the, it's a random, weird niche I've carved for myself.
So we have less than 3 minutes to go, so we're going to do our final thoughts. I guess we'll save you for the last, Amber, for the final thoughts. So, Charlie, do you have a final thought for us?
Oh, I just want to thank Amber again. I'm so honored that she came on a second time for a second interview. I to sound like Sally Field, you like us. You really like us. But thank you, Amber. I really appreciate it.
Aw.
Hassan, final thought?
I kind of mirror Charlie's sentiments. I think it's awesome. I think your work is awesome. Thank you very much for giving it to us. And thank you for answering my question, because it was an awesome answer. Thank you so much.
Aww. Please.
And I say that I really appreciate you get to be a historic for myself, being a celebrity who I get to interview two times in this thing. So this is the first time. So I was actually very excited about this. So you actually a historic footnote in the show of It Came From Radio. So I thank you very much for doing that. I did read the excerpt. It was really good. I'm intending to pick up the book and read the entire thing and then read the next series. We really appreciate you coming and being a guest on our show. And when the movie comes out, you know, come back and promote it, and we'll be happy to talk about that also.
So now, Amber's final thought.
Yes, Amber, what is your final thought? Yes.
My final thought? Well, I'm just so pleased that I got to spend the afternoon with you guys. This was really lovely. You guys had wonderful questions, and you guys are so articulate and sweet, and it's much appreciated. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And the only difference is you're warm. We're freezing.
That is very true.
So thank you once again, Amber. That about does it for this week on It Came From the Radio. Join us right here and every week on WGBB. If you miss any part of this interview, go to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com. Listen to Dark Horse will be up in a week or so. We're also on iHeartRadio, so you can hear us there. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, ICTFR. And we'll see you next week.
Take it easy.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.